Thanks for tuning in. Host Noah Weil is a licensed attorney admitted to practice in Washington State and the Federal Court of the Western District of Washington. Some guests on this program may be licensed attorneys as well. However, the discussion on this podcast is intended to be informative only and is not a substitute for legal advice for your particular situation. The information may be right or may be wrong. Changing laws and the laws of individual states mean the information presented here may not be accurate. But regardless, and this part is important, neither Noah nor any guest here is your lawyer. If you need a lawyer for your individual situation, you should consult and retain your own attorney.
So welcome back to the podcast. My name is Noah Weil, and I'm going to talk about part two of the podcast I started last time. Last time, I was just a few days before trial on a DUI case, and I was talking about preparing my case and what my plan was in front of the jury. And for this one, it ended up being kind of interesting, and I'm going to talk about what happened, but I'm going to kind of start from the beginning on this particular case that I was in and just talk about how I received it or how I started working it up and what I did to get to the point that you heard last time, which was right before trial. I will let you know that I'm not going to use any names or locations for the case. It's obviously in the state of Washington, but I'm not going to go past that. And also that I talked to my client before I started recording, and he was fine with telling the story of the case. So, originally, the client contacted me because he had a DUI. He was charged with DUI. And this is a very common request for a lawyer. It's a very common case I do. And right away, he said that there were some issues, that he was not drinking and driving, that the officer was giving him a hard time for no reason, and that he was completely innocent, which, believe it or not, not everybody actually says that they are innocent when I talk to them, but that's a topic for another time. I certainly listen to them. Some people think they're innocent, and it turns out the law doesn't agree with them, and some people are truly innocent. And part of my job is to sift that out and figure out what we can prove and what they can prove and so on. But anyway, he said, look at the case. I'm innocent. I'm not happy that I was charged with this crime that I know I didn't do. Okay, fair enough. In Washington, when you're arrested for a DUI, even before you've had any court case, the Department of Licensing starts an administrative action to automatically suspend or revoke your driver's license. This administrative action is a complete pain in the ass. They're run by Department of Licensing employees. And they're not fun. And it's probably another topic too, but I consider them one of the less fair judicial processes in the state, in the criminal system. They're administrative hearings. The thing with these hearings is that no matter what happens in the criminal case, they go forward, and vice versa. No matter what happens in the administrative hearing, the criminal case goes forward. They're completely independent of each other. But when you're arrested for the DUI, you get this letter in the mail saying, on such and such date, your license will be suspended for 3 months or a year or whatever, depending on the circumstances. And you can request a hearing to challenge that suspension. It costs you $375, win or lose, but you can challenge it. If you don't challenge it, you're automatically going to get your license suspended. Even if they dismiss the criminal case the next day, you'll still lose your license for a minimum of 3 months. So this was important because at the Department of Licensing hearing, I get to subpoena the police officer, the arresting officer, to come and appear and challenge, you know, his conclusions of the case. They're put under oath, and I can get a recording of the hearing. So regardless of the outcome, at least I'll have this officer say what happened under oath, and so we can't really change it down the road. And it's really useful to have basically a free deposition or a free interview. Well, free to me, I guess it cost the client some money, to talk to this arresting officer about what happened with the case. Because here's what I had. I had the police report. And according to the police reports, my client was driving down the road. He was speeding. He was pulled over for speeding. The officer smelled alcohol. The officer administered a roadside test by asking my client to count backwards, and my client screwed that up. And then my client wouldn't get out of the car when he was asked to. And so he was arrested for DUI. At the station, my client, according to the police report, refused to provide a breath sample, and he was listed as a refusal, which is something significant, which we'll talk about in a second. And so he was charged with DUI. According to the police report, this was an easy case. Smelled like drinking, wasn't driving right, didn't give a breath sample, open and shut. Well, there were some issues with it, but I really want to talk to the officer. So when the Department of Licensing hearing option came about, I said, let's definitely get this guy subpoenaed so we can talk to him and find out what really happened. And so my client agreed. And so we asked for the Department of Licensing hearing. Simultaneous to this, of course, there was the criminal case. Now, the charge on a DUI and a first-time DUI on a refusal, well, I'll back up. For a refusal, you have enhanced mandatory minimum penalties on a DUI. So if you are arrested for DUI and you give a breath sample and it's below a 0.15 blood alcohol content, and the legal limit is 0.08, so it's basically below double the legal limit, you have these penalties. And if it's above 0.15, or if they say you refuse to provide a breath sample at all, then you have enhanced penalties. Okay? And you have higher penalties if you have prior DUI convictions, but in any case, the above 0.15 or refusals equal enhanced penalties. So refusal is a big deal. It means more jail time, more fines, etc. So when I was going to this criminal case, going to these hearings in court, standard practice is they give the defense attorney an offer to plead guilty. And the offer was always plead guilty to DUI, but it instead of the enhanced penalties, it's just the normal penalties. It's very, very rare that plead guilty as charged is the right thing to do, because you still have a DUI in your record, and there's a difference in penalties, but it's not such a significant difference that you should often give up the chance to win by contesting the charge. So, for example, if you are charged with DUI and it's just a 0.08 DUI, your mandatory minimum, if you're convicted, is a day in jail. And if it's a refusal or above a 0.15, your mandatory minimum is 2 days in jail. Now, 2 days in jail is certainly worse than 1 day in jail, but is it so much worse that you shouldn't even roll a dice and try to win the case? That's a choice for the individual client, but generally, the plead guilty as charged offers I don't take very seriously. But it's happened. It's just not common. So anyway, there was never a better offer. They were always saying, your guy was drunk driving, he was obstinate to the police officer, he refused, blah, blah, blah. We're not going to give you anything better. Fair enough. So we do the Department of Licensing hearing, which is incidentally telephonic. You subpoena the officer, they call in, you're in your office, and you ask them all the questions in the world you want to try to get to what happened. So here's what I asked. I said, how did my client get your attention? Oh, he was speeding. Okay. Was he swerving? No. Was there lights on at night? Yes. Was he signaling when he was making turns and lane changes? Yes. You said you arrested him in a parking lot. Did he slow down properly before turning into the parking lot? Yes. Was there any other bad driving at all besides speeding? No. Okay, great. You contacted him And he said, and you said you smelled alcohol. Did you ask him if he was drinking? Yes. Did he say he was drinking? No. Okay. Did you offer a portable breath test? No, I did not. You asked him to count backwards? Yes. You said he didn't do it correctly. That's correct. Is the counting backwards a standardized test? No, it's not. Did you offer to perform any standardized tests to determine intoxication? No, I did not. You asked him to get out of the car? Yes, I did. And he did not want to get out of the car? That's correct. And did he have to get out of the car that time? No. Okay. And so what I'm establishing is a couple things. To uphold his license conviction, which is nominally while we're there, you've got to establish that the stop was correct and that the arrest was correct. The stop for speeding, interestingly enough, the manuals of training on DUIs, there's a lot of indicia of intoxicated driving in the road, swerving, being in the wrong lane, not driving your headlights on. Those are all established indicators of drunk driving. Speeding is actually not. If you're going too slow, that's a sign of drunk driving. But simple speeding, according to all the manuals and all the training materials, is not in itself a sign of drunk driving. It's still a reason to pull somebody over and do your investigation, but it alone does not say, oh, this person's probably drunk. Whereas weaving in your lanes and not driving your headlights on is a stronger indication. But to arrest somebody for DUI, you've got to have more than just bad driving. You've got to have specific articulable facts that say, oh, this person is definitely intoxicated. Well, not definitely, but more than just a hunch. So here is the actual chronology of events. They have this little conversation when my client's car is parked, and he says, I think you've been drinking, do this backwards count thing, whatever. And then he says, I want you to get out of the car so I can continue investigating. Because he didn't have enough information to make an arrest decision then. And my client said, do I have to? Which is a fair question. I don't see it very often, but I think it's a perfectly reasonable question. Do I have to get out of the car? And the officer said, no, you don't have to, but I want you to. And my client said, pretty intelligently, I don't want to get out of the car though. So the officer said, fine. So then the officer starts calling for backup. Oh, we've got somebody who is being a little obstinate here. I'm not used to that. I don't like that. And then my client decides to get out of the car voluntarily. He's not dragged out or anything. He just decides to get out. This is the key moment right here for the whole case because, as we've already established, the officer didn't have enough to arrest my client for DUI on the spot, just did not have enough information. So when my client did get out of the car, this is where the officer should have said, okay, let's continue with the investigation. I'll offer you the chance to do more tests, or I'll ask you more questions, or I'll offer my little portable breath test, something like that. But what happened was my client was arrested right there. Just said, you're under arrest. I'm done doing this investigation. You're going down to the station. This was incredibly premature. I don't know why this officer did that. I know he's not used to people asserting their rights. I know that because no officer is used to that. I don't know what else. It was 2 a.m. in the morning. Who knows? So my client's arrested, taken to the station. My client, I think, you know, rightfully or wrongfully, I wouldn't recommend this, but he's doing like, what are you doing? Why are you arresting me? I'm not drinking and driving. I'm not intoxicated. And the cop is just like, annoyed. And they go through the process at the station. We take this breath test. And my guy's like, no, I want a blood draw. Cop said, all right, let's start the process for a blood draw. He sees that he marks it as a refusal because if you refuse to take your breath test, even if you want a blood draw later, it still counts as a refusal. So he says, you refuse to give a breath test, which was true. And then he says, okay, let's start the process for a blood draw. And then he's seeing that other officers are having trouble with the same paperwork, and he just gives up. He says, I can't get a blood draw. There's too much going on. We're done. So he just books my client to jail. So there's no breath test and no blood draw. And that's it. That is their case. They've got speeding. They've got counting backwards, making mistakes and counting backwards. And here's what happened with the counting backwards. He's supposed to count from, I think it was like 58 to 43, and he counted to 38, and then 39. That was how he screwed it up. He counted backwards, and he kept going, and then he repeated a number. Okay, yeah, clearly clearly Director Error. Anyway, so at the Department of Licensing hearing, I make the same pitch. I just say, look, he should have continued investigating. He arrested him way, way, way too early. He should not have arrested him that quickly. He did not have enough information to say that he had probable cause to arrest for DUI. And the hearing officer, to her credit, said, yeah, I agree with you. I think he had some bare suspicions, but he jumped the gun too much, and I agree, and I'm going to dismiss the action. Your client's license is saved, which was great, which is really uncommon. The the win ratio of those things is like 19% or something. 4 out of 5 are upheld, and some of those are because the officer doesn't even show up to a subpoena. And it's just not common. So to win on that was really gratifying, and it made me happy. And so this officer, he gave me a lot of good stuff. He was very forthcoming, to his credit. He says during the Department of Licensing hearing, I'm not really comfortable with the arrest. I really wish I'd gotten that breath test. I really wish I'd gotten that blood draw. He's just talking about how he wished he had gotten more information, even though he was the one who decided he didn't want to get more information. He just kept saying I wasn't comfortable with it. So of course I order a copy of this hearing where he's placed under oath and said, I'm not comfortable with this prosecution, and I get it transcribed. So I take this transcription where the officer's just giving me a bunch of really good stuff, and I take it to the prosecutor and said, you've got to give me better than plead guilty as charged. You've got a real problem with this case. Look at what you have. And the prosecutor who I was talking to at the time just said, congratulations for winning at the Department of Licensing. Our judges are a little different here. They're not going to give you the time of day. Our juries don't like drunk drivers. This is the best you're going to get. Okay, fair enough. When you get an offer from a prosecutor, you have to take it to the client. You don't get to just unilaterally say no, present it to the client, because it's their life, it's their case. They have to make the final call. And so I did, and I could give my opinion, and sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. But it wasn't even a question about my opinion, because my client was like, hell no, in no way will I plead guilty to this DUI, which I know I didn't do, which will really mess up my criminal record and driving history and all this stuff. Great, no problem. So we went around things a few times, but we set the case for trial. When you do that, you get to make motions to suppress evidence, to dismiss the case, and I made a motion to dismiss the case outright. Just saying, for the same reason as the Department of Licensing, that there was no probable cause to arrest my client, that this officer jumped the gun. And we had a hearing on that, went in front of the judge. I got to cross-examine the officer. And not to the officer's credit, I gave him a copy of the transcript ahead of the hearing just to say, because this was months later, just say, hey, just don't forget what you said before. Here you go, just to refresh your memory. And the officer on the witness stand said, I might have misspoken. I'm going to back off from that a little bit. I was super comfortable arresting him. I had all the information I need. And the judge denied the motion. She just said, speeding, smells like alcohol, failed the counting test, good enough. She wasn't happy with the client. Okay. So, we're not in any worse shape. We're still setting the case for trial. I'd rather put my case in front of 6 jurors anyway. And so the trial's on that Wednesday. And I'm preparing, I'm staying up late, I'm putting together arguments. When I prepare for a trial, I do what I call focus grouping, which is basically just getting friends around, buy them a beer or something, and just practice my arguments in front of them. And I tune it, and I change inflections, and, play around with word choices. And I get feedback, and it's really helpful. A lot of my friends aren't lawyers, and it's nice to get their opinion on things. And every time I give my pitch, I do my opening statement, closing statement, every time I do it, they're just saying, wow, how are they going forward? It sounds like they don't have anything, which is nice to hear, but it also puts a lot of pressure on you because they just keep saying, it's your case to lose. But they gave good feedback about how I can be more persuasive and all that. It's always helpful. I love it. So we have trials set for Wednesday, and we go to court, and the judge said, unfortunately, we're overbooked. More people set the case for trial on Wednesday than we have courtrooms, which happens. And we do an order of trials. Basically, if you're in jail, you get first priority. And if there's an interpreter, if the defendant doesn't speak English, there's a priority, blah, blah, blah. The point was we got bumped to Friday. Okay. Now, What I did mention before was that before Wednesday, I got a call from a new prosecutor on the case, because they rotate sometimes. And this new prosecutor said, I've looked at the case and I want to make a new offer. And instead of a DUI, it's a reckless driving. And I took it to my client. He said, no. I said, okay. We said no back. Because a reckless driving still has license suspensions associated with it. DUI has multiple months, and reckless driving has 1 month. And then I took it to her and said, I can't do it. And so the prosecutor came back and said, okay, how about negligent driving, which is a simple misdemeanor, no license suspension, no jail time, still a crime, though. And so a negligent driving is a pretty good result for a DUI, especially with a refusal. And while their case was weak, you know, you're risking something when you go to trial. There's no guarantees with a jury. And so I may have, in my client's shoes, taken this deal just for the finality of it or the certainty of it, just to know my license was completely safe. I definitely wasn't going to go to jail, no matter, you know, all this stuff. And I took it to him, and he thought about it for a while, and he said, can't do it, don't want to do it, rather go to trial. I just can't believe a jury of my peers would convict me with the BS that this cop has produced or did not produce. I said, absolutely, you're right, totally get it. Might feel the same way, might not. It'd be a close call for me. So I totally get what you're coming from. You were there, I wasn't, and I'm 100% behind you. And if he'd said, I'll take that deal, I'd also be 100% behind him, but that's just my job. So I go back to the prosecutor, said, thank you for the offer. It's a fair offer, you know, the first fair offer of the case, but I can't take it. And she said, okay, no problem, I understand. And to, you know, her credit, she was fair about it. And also with understanding, it's not like she goes to jail if she loses. The only person that goes to jail if they lose is the defendant. So, you know, no skin off her back, whatever. So we accept the case. As I said, we went on Wednesday. There wasn't space available. So they said, come back Friday. We'll definitely have a courtroom for you. Okay. The prosecutor also says, hey, if your client changes his mind, you know, give me a call. The deal will still be open before Friday. I said, okay. So on Thursday, I'm still preparing. And I talked to my client. I said, just to let you know, she told me the deal was still open if you're interested. And the client said, I don't think I want to take it, but what do you think? And I said, well, you know, what I want doesn't matter. I'm completely irrelevant because it's not my life. But I can tell you the way I've helped people make this decision of whether to take a deal or to go to trial is to think about in 10 years from now whether you'll look back and regret the choice you made, or you feel comfortable that you made the right decision with the information you had. And he said, well, I appreciate that, Noah, and I think if I didn't take my chances at trial in 10 years, I'd be kicking myself for not rolling the dice, because I just feel like I've got a strong case and I feel like I'm innocent. I said, well, then you shouldn't take the deal. And he said, we're going to go forward. Okay. So that was Thursday morning. Thursday afternoon, I get a call from a new person who is another prosecutor in the unit. He's the supervisor of the unit. And he called me and said, Noah, I got to sign this case, or I took this case on because my other prosecutors are elsewhere. And I'm looking at the transcript you sent me, and I'm looking at the notes, and I'm looking at the materials, and I don't think we can win a trial. And I said, okay, well, you know, what are you going to do about that? And he said, will your client take a speeding ticket because he was speeding? And I said, yes. And he will. And talked to my client. I said, you're going to take the speeding ticket. It's a dismissal of all criminal charges. There's no criminal risk. There's no license risk, no criminal history hit, and no collateral consequences except paying a fine and maybe an insurance bump. He said, well, you're taking it. It's a sure win. It's 100% guarantee. Even if we have a 99% chance of winning at the trial, a 1 in 100 chance of losing a DUI trial versus a speeding ticket, it's not even a question. I wouldn't do it if the odds were 1 in 10,000. And he said, okay, you're right. And, you know, he's thinking, oh, they're vulnerable now, but a speeding ticket's fantastic. So on Friday, which was supposed to be our trial day, we go into court. And the judge said, are everybody ready to go to trial? And the prosecutor said, no, I don't think we can win. Mr. Weil has ably prepared his case and he gave me some evidence, this transcript, and we're going to have trouble. So we're dismissing the DUI completely, and the client will accept a speeding ticket instead as a penalty. And the judge looked at me and said, is this true? And I said, yep, it's all true. I did a great job. And the judge said, I was kidding about the great job, but the judge did say, that's very rare a result. Congratulations to my clients. You know, usually things don't end this way. Give your lawyer some thanks, which is, it's always nice to hear a judge say that. And we went through the paperwork on the speeding ticket, whatever, $200, and that was it. The case is over. I was ready to go to trial. We were ready to go to trial. And the prosecutor just looked at the case and made a really professional decision that it wasn't worth wasting taxpayers' time and money to come to court for a sure loss. I don't think the prosecutor thought my client was drinking and driving, or at least drunk driving. And the officer didn't believe it, probably. And he just said, it's just not worth the resources to prosecute a case like this. And I know for a fact, because I deal with them all the time, a lot of prosecutors wouldn't feel that way. They would say, well, he's probably guilty of something, and let's see how much we can get. And even if it's unlikely for us to win, it's not like we lose anything if we lose the case. So let's go forward. And they just kind of run roughshod with the resources of the city or the county. But this prosecutor, the supervisor, said, no, that's not the example I want to set for the people that I'm supervising. If we can't win a case, we shouldn't take it to trial. And so he dismissed it, and the client was really happy, and everybody thought it was a fair result and a great result. And so the trial that I had spent nights and weekends and hours upon hours preparing for didn't happen. And this, on the eve of the trial, it just went away. And that happens sometimes. But you know what? I'm happy I prepared. I'm happy that I got to go through that process. I'm happy that I worked the case up so well to get to that result. And I'm happy that my client was happy. He was very happy with the result. Everybody was happy. And it was a good resolution, a fair resolution that I think was the right resolution. It was too bad it took months and months and months to get there. But all's well that ends well. If something like this comes along again, hopefully we get the same result. It's pretty rare, but here's hoping. So next time there's a case that actually does go to trial, I'll talk about that. But until then, it is Noah Weil signing off.